Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everybody. We are back. We are back. Myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and we're waiting on Mareko Momasi Fire Arts. Now, he's having problems with his computer. We're hoping he's going to join us. So he's just sent us a picture of his screen, and it's black, and it's just loading very, very slowly. But I can see his reflection in the screen, and he's holding something in his hand. And I'm not one to cast aspersions, but I think it's a big smoked sausage he's got in his hand. I don't know what it is. If you look carefully at his reflection.
The best part of this so he's taking a picture of in front of this camera, and you see the black Apple screen with the white apple, and then he's sticking his finger up like making the number one, you know.
Is that
however
what it is? Right.
However, okay. However, as soon as it came to us, Craig said, is he holding his penis? Because his first finger looks like a dick, and then his last three fingers looks like he's grabbing it. And I said, I hope not, because if that's the case, and Mareko Momasi, he's got a 9-inch dong, I don't know if I can handle any more from that guy. So, I'm not going to put it on as the thumbnail for next week. So we're gonna see how it goes.
We need to now.
No, I don't think we can. I don't think we can. I don't think we can. I don't think it's right.
I think an AI scan of that would be like, excuse me, what are you posting? That?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I mean, literally, it's as if, hey guys, I'm having problems with my computer. Here, look at my giant penis. It looks just crazy. It's like, you know, it looks like he's about to fillet himself or something. It's just the whole thing is horrible. It's the greatest. We'll hold on to it for someday. But then I don't know about this.
He is holding on to it. He is, believe me.
So how anyway. Have you been? Tell me. We didn't have you last week because something fun happened. Can you talk about that? Or?
Yeah, last minute I was pulled into a like a songwriting camp at Rockfield Studios. So that's 16 songwriters, all there for 4 days, all recording a bunch of songs. Like super, everybody working super fast, and everybody was sort of, can you play bass? Yeah, come and play bass on this. Can I borrow your guitar? Come and play, you know. And it was all very sort of quick. Very quick. But we had, a couple of cool people there. So Aziz was there from Stone Roses. He was there. Nigel from Dodgy was there. A bunch of people. And so I was there. So almost like as a mentor, really, to help with the songwriting. It was great. And it was very last minute for me. Somebody else pulled out. So I got a phone call. And lots and lots of fun. It was really good.
Wow. That's a great opportunity, right?
Yeah. And what I loved is, so these sessions were 4 hours. So they were hoping to come into the studio and record a song in 4 hours. And some of them just had an idea for a song or whatever, you know. So we had a drummer and a bass player in each studio who were just ready to go at any point, you know. And they all come away with like these great songs. So it was a real experience. So
amazing.
Very much glad we did that, yeah.
And how was your Christmas, New Year's holiday?
Ooh, very... I'd say quiet, but, you know, it's never going to be quiet with three kids. But, you know, it was just us for the first time in years, because obviously we've been in France previously and people would come over to us for Christmas. But now we're here closer to family. we didn't see anybody over Christmas, which was bliss, to be honest with you. So we got a chance to, you know, settle into the new house and so on. It was lovely. The kids loved it. They had a great Christmas. But they're all settled in school now, and it feels as if we've been here forever.
Really?
Already, yeah. We bought goats the other day. We got goats now. We're goat people, and they are the best thing ever. Ever.
Right.
So funny. So funny.
What possessed you?
Well, we've got a bit of land here, and there's a part of it which is just full of brambles. And lots of people said, you know, goats will get rid of that. And we were like, well, we've got the space. And the kids love goats anyway, because we used to have a farm next to us. Well, not next to us, but in France, we used to go to this farm quite often. The kids would play with the goats. So we're like, we could get goats. And yeah, so yeah, we registered to, you know, to be able to keep the animals on the land. Then we got the goats. So yeah, we've had them a week and they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. They're little tiny little pygmy goats. They're small, you know, smaller than a dog, you know, they're brilliant. Yeah, the kids love them. So yeah, so it's been yeah, a quiet one, I suppose, but I'm still not right. My leg and back, they've been giving me some problems. So I think I've aged probably 6 years in the last 6 months, honestly.
Oh, no.
Honestly, that's how I feel. I'm putting on more weight because I can barely walk, and it's just like, oh, it's just, yeah, everything's a bit of a pain, but it's all temporary. People are in far worse states, you know, that's the way I'm thinking of it.
Are you hoping for some relief, or?
Yes. So I think last time we spoke, I'd had an injection right into the nerve. So basically, I've got a nerve that's pinched between my spine. If you think of the vertebrae in the spine, I've got a nerve that's pinched between two bones. So the first idea was to give me like a relaxant, an injection. And the idea was that was almost like, you know, relax it, you know, jelly it out of the joint. It didn't work. So I think it's probably going to be surgery. I go back next week. Oh. I think it's going to be some sort of surgery, but, it's fine. You know, I say, you know, walking's a problem. I can walk, but by midday every day, if I've been for any sort of walk, I'm done for the day, then, you know, I can't really do anything. I'm in a bit of pain and I just gotta have to sit down. But yeah, it's fine. People are far worse situations than me, and you know, one of the things about getting older, I suppose, eh? Hey,
listen, I'm telling you, man, I haven't been able ever since the marathon. Well, for the first month, I couldn't get my feet in a pair of shoes,
yeah,
and then now that I'm by myself, I'm finding myself getting to the shop at 6:45. Really early in the morning, staying late and just kind of fulfilling orders. And we just finalized, I told you a few months ago, we got reached out about doing prototypes for a steak knife company.
Yes.
And we had a contract, we wrote up a contract in regards to what our, you know, scope of work is. And, and the guy came yesterday for the last thing, and I went well beyond the scope of the work, and I really kind of, I think I created a relationship, helped create a relationship with this guy who I really like. He's not a pain in the ass at all. He's great. And he really liked the prototype, the final prototypes. We got the stencils made. We did, you know, thought about how to do this in, you know, for me to manufacture it. And, it was accepted, and I went past the contract, and we're getting paid for the last part of it. So the next step is going to be figuring out pricing and figuring out how we're going to do it. And it's very exciting, but at the same time, like, I'm coming to the shop really early and I'm leaving really late, and I'm like dead. I'm totally
working hard. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what I got? It came on my Instagram algorithm. And I asked my wife what she thought, and it's a mat, and it has all these spikes on it. You know, have you ever seen these things?
No.
It looks like a little. It's a mat that you roll out, and then there are these little. It look like little roses. Every you know, right, all next to each other, and then the roses have spikes. Right. And the concept is just like a, you know, those old. You know, remember those? See those old fakers on, fakirs, whatever the hell you call them, lying on a bed of nails.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that. So I was talking to my wife about it. I said, hey, what do you think of this? It's supposed to be acupressure, right?
Right, yeah.
So she says...
I've seen similar things, I think, which are like big, like almost like big rolling pins, and they've got spikes on you. Roll them up and down your back.
But those are soft spikes. This is hard plastic spikes.
Oh, wow.
It's literally like torture. And I said to my wife, who's my wife is, I'll tell you what, you can, everybody has, you know, they watch Instagram and all of a sudden they're the real doctor and stuff like that. My wife is the first person to tell you when something's full of shit. Like, so, like so my friends of mine will talk about all, every, you know, she is so like conservative in terms of like how things are.
Yeah.
And when it comes to these health things and then peptides and amino acids, if I ever bring anything like that up to her, she rolls her eyes and it's like, it's so, it's when I ask her about something, she rolls her eyes and it's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because I know in her mind, she's like, God, you're so stupid. You know what I mean? It's yeah, like, yeah. It's like, you know, I never talk about anything health or nutrition or, you know, yeah, any of this bullshit. God, when Mareko talks about a chiropractor, if I even bring up a chiropractor, Taylor, she's like, don't spend your money with those knuckle crackers. Don't fuck, you know. So, like, she's the first person to say if something's full of shit. So I said to her, I'm like, listen, I'm doing this. I know better. And I should say, you know, what do you think of these rolling? She goes, oh, we have one. And I said, why do we have one? And she goes, well, we have this. We had to spend a certain amount of money off our, we have like an FSA card for health insurance and stuff like that. And she said, I needed to get, you know, something. And I ended up getting it. And she rolled it out and I laid down on it. It was like torture. Fucking torture. My back was bred. You just lay down it and you're just kind of slowly getting, trying to get comfortable. You're just laying on this goddamn thing for 20 minutes.
So what's the benefit? What does it do?
It's acupressure, and it's these points all over your back, and it's supposed to, like, stimulate blood flow. I don't know, some horse shit, whatever. I slept so goddamn hard. And I'm not telling this to the listeners. Get yourself a fucking thing. My back looks like...
It's a promo code. You got
promo code Knife Talk 10. Fucking rip your back apart. I mean, it literally looked like I'd been, like, attacked by, like, bears. Oh. My back was bright red, but that night I slept so goddamn hard, I thought I was dead.
Wow.
I couldn't get up. Wow. I didn't go up to. Usually, I got to get up a couple of times, take a leak. It was hilarious, but it was funny.
Punctured. It was just leaking.
Well,
out of
you. Yeah, that's right. But it looks like it would. But it's like you're on this bed of nails for the most part, and you're all spread out to the point where.
So how close are these spikes? Is it?
They're close enough that you don't get impaled. Right. They're holding you up. I think the whole bed of nails things is hilarious because it's just like. If it was two nails, you're fucking boned. You know, it's going through you. Yeah. But if it's like every, you know, half inch or so, I think you just kind of like spread your whole body apart. You know, your weight down, and it's not a big deal. So that was the whole thing of this. So in terms of your back situation, you know, really, why don't you fuck yourself up with this torture device?
Yeah, it sounds great. You've really sold it to me.
Oh, you know what the worst part was? I thought, you know what? Because the first time I did, I was laying on the floor. And I was like, you get comfortable. You make noises until you're just like trying to chill out, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I don't want to lie on the floor. I want to lay in bed. So I roll the fucker out on the bed. Big mistake. Because like your body starts to push your weight down and then it just like it starts to embed into your back.
I
was like a fucking Velcro, you know, a piece of, by the end of it. Fucking pull it off me like tape. You know, but it's good to hear your voice. I guess we're not going to have Mareko today. I think we're going to have to push the all beef review. Maybe we could do a couple beefs to kind of prime the pump, but and then we'll push off. I know this isn't, I personally like a teaser. We do have a few announcements to make.
And
we also have a new promo code for one of our customers, for one of our sponsors.
Yes. Yeah,
I had a nice conversation with, that's going to be new too, a new promo code with new savings. So we'll save it for that. But I had something funny, and this is for the listeners of Knife Talk. I always say, everybody, if you want to reach out to us, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, where you can send us questions, you can send us beefs, we have a shit ton of beefs, and you can send us your audio messages, we have a lot of audio messages. Something really funny happened on the Instagram Live the last two times I do it. Usually I'll do it 15 minutes, 30 minutes before we record. And it's like, I'm by myself, so I'm not talking a lot. And I feel like I need to kind of like stretch it out, as I said the last time. You know, like basically what Mareko was doing on his computer, stretching it out. And the last year I did it, and all of a sudden you see this name. And it was one of those bullshit, you know, like mosaic underscore pin underscore Damascus knife.
Yeah, yeah.
One of these
yeah.
bullshit guys, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm having a conversation. I'm talking to the audience, getting ready for the podcast. And the guy says, hi, are you interested in any, you know, cheap Damascus, something like that? And I was so infuriated. I said, you're in the wrong place. These are the wrong people. Your mother. I, you know, screamed and hollered at him, right? And I forgot about it, but it was really funny. Everyone thought it was really funny. I just reamed this dude out. So today, about a half an hour ago, I went on, and one of our listeners, Dom Rav Designs, I'm giving him a salute. He won. He won the first round. This, you could see that, you know, when you're looking at the Instagram lives, you see the names of people coming in to watch the live, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there was one, I think it said Mosaic underscore knife pins or something like that. And I, before I had a chance to say anything, Dom typed in, boy, I could really use some cheap Damascus. And I immediately recognized Dom is fishing for guy to fucking say something. And I started giggling, but I didn't say anything. I said, all right, I know what you're doing, Dom. I know what you're doing. You're doing a great job. And within 2 minutes, there was the hand emoji from Mosaic Underpin Knives, something like that. Hi. And as soon as you wrote hi,
I said, can I interest you?
Yeah. I said, sir, you got to go. I know what you're trying to do, but this is not the place for you. With peace and love. And I respectfully kicked him out. And then I announced that the fishing expedition is now on. So anytime you go to one of our lives, throw in the bait. See if we can come up, see if we can find one of these guys to like take the bait. It was hilarious. It was hilarious. The part that wasn't funny was the fact that there was nobody there besides me just laughing at the phone, you know. But it was really funny, and the guys got into it, and this is going to be our new bit on Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, where anytime we do a live,
bait him.
Bait, you got to throw a lure out. See if you can catch one of these guys, and I will announce the winners each time. So Dom Rav Designs, he's our sniper. He's the first winner of the Knife Talk Fishing Tournament. And congratulations, you caught a lunker.
Nice.
So it was actually very funny because it was very clear that he knew exactly what he was doing. And it was the funniest part is you saw the guy's name, and it was almost like when you're fishing, you know, you see a shadow. And he just kind of like plopped that lure down real quiet-like, and then everyone started throwing their lures down next to him, and I had to – it wasn't right. So that's the funny thing. But
Nice. So what are we going to do? Should we the old beef review? Should we wait till next week when Morocco's here?
Why don't we do just a couple of beefs?
Yeah.
Just to kind of like, because I feel bad that we haven't done it in 2 weeks. It's fine. It's all good. I have another announcement that we can make at the end of the thing. Good for me. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll wait for the next week. We'll do that. But let's do a couple of beefs. We'll do some questions. Okay. We have some audio questions too. So.
Okay. Well, should we start with, do you have a beef?
I do. I have a lot of beefs. beef number one is angel hair pasta. I hate angel hair pasta.
Really?
I don't like it at all. I think it's never al dente. It always tastes bad. I don't like it. I don't like angel hair pasta. I'll never order angel hair pasta.
No.
Did you ever
order it? Yeah, I've eaten it. I'd never order
would
it.
Would you never, you're never fired up about it, right?
Wondering if I've ever eaten it, even. I know what you mean. I can picture it, but I don't know if I've ever eaten it.
Awful. Hmm. Angel hair pasta. That's number one. Number two is people who talk in cliches. I don't. If I'm having a serious conversation with someone, and then they answer me in a bullshit cliche.
Give me an example.
You know what I mean by cliche. One of these. You know, a saying that's not an original saying. You know what I mean? Like, the grass is always greener on the other side. You know what I'm talking about? When we're having a serious conversation and somebody
plenty more gives, fish in the sea, all that kind of stuff.
If I'm having a conversation with someone and they give me, there are many other fish in the sea, I just immediately don't want to talk anymore. Because it makes me, it's true. Because it makes me, if we're having this real meaningful conversation and you can't get up to come up with something other than some cliche.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like you're tired. Just say you're tired. Just say you're tired. And you want to go home. You know, you don't have to. If you're going to give it to me, that's what you're saying. You know, it's just, yeah. I hate when people talk cliches. Do you have any beefs? I haven't heard of another beef.
I do. People online, right, claiming they've made something when it's clearly AI. Right? Oh. And I'm seeing so much of it. And it's like clearly, and like songs as well. And he's just like, well, that's clearly AI, you know? And they're like, well, but yeah, but I've made it. Okay, I may have used AI, but I wrote this. And it's like, no, you didn't. At the best, you directed it. At best, you know? I find it weird. It's creepy. And it's just, there's no need for it. There's no need.
We were talking, Mareko and I were talking last week. And I'm, you know, in the beginning, when we first started doing this podcast, I thought, well, the handmade community is boned. We're boned. Mm. You know, I thought the economy is going to go down the tubes. Everything's going to be in deep shit. All these guys don't know what the hell they're doing.
That's still going to happen.
That is, but it's like, yeah. At the same time, it's like, I never thought that I thought that the handmade was over. I just thought it was over. I lit my heart. I didn't really say it on the podcast, but I was just like not feeling good about it. And now we were talking about it last week, especially with knife makers. We got to talk about knives at some point. Is that there's so much AI generated stuff, and there's so much, you know, even I got knives from guys who clearly get these knives made in other countries, or they have them made, and they refer to them as a production line, and then they'll say something like hand finished in the USA or some bullshit like that.
Yeah.
And when you feel it, they're good knives. But you feel it, you don't feel any connection to any humanity whatsoever. You know, the knives are done, they're cut, they're belt finished, they're good knives, they're perfectly good.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right, bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards pay back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
But you feel like there's a lack of humanity. And I honestly believe, and I'm getting to the point now where I bought enough of those from people that I know, that I feel like the handmade community has the upper hand, because at some point people are going to be so sick of the things that you get in name your country that sells things cheap, and they're going to want a degree of humanity. And now I'm more than probably the most in the last, let's say, 10 years, I felt as though people who have a high skill and they're able to do things by human hands, whether it be music, whether it be art, whether it be craft, have the upper hand.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm hoping that, you know, people will see the value in things again of imperfections in things.
Right.
Because whether it's making something or whether it's a song, or whether it's a piece of writing or whatever, you know, a painting, whatever it may be, I think it's those imperfections that make it you know, obviously made by humans, and you can see character and soul in it that way. But you know, the way computers make things, they make them to be perfect, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time where they'll be faking imperfections. But I think, if I think of things from a music point of view, a lot of imperfections, they're just like happy accidents. They happen, and you're like, well, that's great, we're going to keep that, or, you know, whatever it may be. And I don't think that a computer will be able to make those decisions. They'll be trying to recreate an imperfection, but it's not going to be real. And I think we're clever enough as humans to know when we're being sort of manipulated, you know. And you know, you see videos like on Instagram, stuff like that, and they're obviously AI, you know.
Yeah.
For some reason, I'm seeing lots of videos of people in zoos being attacked by animals.
I know what you're talking about. And does it have the caption is in like some Thai language? Some foreign?
Exactly.
It's
not
in English characters.
They're all clearly AI, but then you get sucked in. You look at the comments, and people are like, oh my God, did they survive? And I'm just like, I don't think that those comments are real. I think those comments are made by some machine as well, you know?
Go ahead, sorry.
It's just weird, and I think we can see it, and I know AI is getting better, and they're making things that are more realistic and all the rest of it, but I think there's always going to be that thing where it's just inhuman, and I think even when they're trying to make it more human, like by putting in errors or putting in these imperfections, I think we'll know because it's mathematical what they're doing, and you know there's patterns to it, and I think we know when we're being played.
I don't know if we know, because the funny thing is like sometimes if I think maybe it's AI, I told Hillary sent me something. Oh, I sent Hillary something. You know, the interesting thing is, and you're probably not at this point yet, but my daughter has just turned 21, and we've all been communicating through Instagram. So we send each other messages through Instagram, but we also send each other reels.
Like, yeah, my wife and I, that's the only way we communicate these
days.
It's
the most fun. It's so much fun. But my daughter does it. She does it with us too, and it's so much fun. And the funny thing is usually what they'll send me are recipes that they want me to do. Or I'll send a recipe thinking this is something you want me to do. And that's fun. But sometimes we'll send each other stupid shit. And I sent my wife one last night of this woman who was picking up this incredibly obese cat. This cat was fucking fat. And I sent it to my wife. I sent it to my wife lying in bed next to her. That's how we're at
you
now.
You said that you just wait for the reaction.
I'm waiting for. We're about to get into the point where we're texting in the, you know, lying in the bed together and texting each other in the bed. And she turns to me and she goes, you know, that's AI. And I said, I don't think it's AI. And she goes, why not? I said, because I always look in the comments. And if they say AI, that's when I make the final decision. It's AI. That's the. She goes, that's how you judge if something's AI. Yeah. I said, yeah. If I look down the comments and there's a lot of people writing AI, then it's AI. Yeah. But I had to do, you know, there was this whole stretch of people posting these like night vision videos of like foxes holding hands with rabbits walking down the street and all this, you know. That's, or like there's one where there's like a fucking badger riding on the back of a goddamn wolf down a tunnel like they're best friends, like a Disney movie. And they're all these crazy nighttime videos. People said, all right, if you see the nighttime videos, like there's one of like 100 rabbits jumping on a trampoline in the middle of the night. If you see the night ones are all AI, right?
Yeah.
So then, okay, so the night ones are AI. Then you see another one is AI. Then you figure out the AI. Ben Snoor and I send each other probably 15 reels a day. It's usually somebody end up going into the scorpion. You know what the scorpion is?
No.
Is like a skateboarder or a surfer or somebody on a set of skis or skates. They go forward. Their face hits the ground and then their their feet go up and over so it like makes the scorpion tail. So if there's a scorpion, he's getting it or I'm getting it, you know. The scorpion. Scorpion's the greatest. But we never know what's AI or not. Like, do you think this is AI? I think this is, you know, this one's AI. Or, and it's very frustrating. It gets to the point where now I think if the cameraman is so good that he get it perfectly, that's AI.
And if they don't react, as in, like, instantly drop the camera, go to help. Yeah. That's the context of what they're shooting. Yeah.
But you're right. It's and that actually gets me into another beef, which is, I'm calling it engagement farming. And a lot of it is, and I don't know if I heard that somewhere, I just made it up, but it's engagement farming. I'm calling engagement farming this. My wife sent me a video. This is I'm in New York. This is Thursday. I don't know what day it is. It's the 15th. Yesterday, the 14th, Verizon, which is the cell phone carrier that we have, had a power out, had an outage nationwide. Did you hear about it at all?
No.
It was a big deal because all of a sudden, anyone who had a Verizon phone with Verizon service couldn't call or text unless you're Wi-Fi. And this is a big deal, you know. It's all of a sudden you can't communicate. You realize once you can't communicate with your family or whatever, you've got, you know.
Well, so more than that, like your banking and all these things, you know, if you've got no connection.
Well, if you're just using your cell phone, you know, the computers were working, everything was working. It was just a cellular service.
Okay. Right.
So this morning, Hillary sends me this video. This dude, and he's sitting in his shitty apartment. You can see his coat, you know, his shoe rack behind him with his closet door open. He's sitting in his thing and he's telling you what this means, that this is the government making changes and this is a soft attack to the people. And my wife's a smart woman. Like I said, she's very smart. And I said to her, he's saying in very confident, and he's kind of getting you scared, getting outrageous. And I'm like, don't trust the news from a guy who's telling you with his shoe rack behind him, and he's in his, you know, pajamas, and he's speaking forcefully. It was very clear that this guy was, you know, taking a situation, making it scary. There's five other guys doing the same goddamn thing, and it's almost like they're not really trying to be public service. They're trying to get engagement. Yeah. And then that engagement helps their Instagram or whatever. I find that to be so – I find the use of engagement to scare people or to create this outrageousness for everything to be really disgraceful.
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of posts where people will be talking or doing whatever they're doing, but there'll be something weird in the post on purpose. Right. Like they'll be sitting at a desk and they'll be like a dildo or something next to them. You know? It's not mentioned. So you know, then in the comments, people are like, "Is nobody going to mention the dildo?" You know, and all of a sudden there's the shed load of comments that they're all talking about. You know, and it's this weird thing. Yeah, like you said, to get engagement, it's. To what end? You know, I mean, how are people getting paid from Instagram? If they've got a business they're being promoting, I can see how that there's an end goal and you'll get money. But are Instagram paying people just to have eyeballs on?
My man, Every Day's Feast Day, Bob, the guy who has got my knives, he's got like 700,000 followers. He quit his job. He's doing content full time. He can support his whole family on it. Between Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, I don't know how he monetizes everything.
Yeah,
he just quit his job. He's starting over. He's doing great. And he's doing great. He does great videos. Really helpful. And I gotta tell you, there are a lot of great things that people do. I think that recipes are great. I think even the viral stuff, getting people to cook, is really good. Especially for knife makers, you should be like fired up that people are trying to cook more. But I think that that's great. He's not controversial. I mean, the only thing is controversial if you don't wear a pair of gloves. And then all of a sudden, everyone's freaking out. But I mean,
how is he getting paid with Instagram then? How?
I don't
see ads on Instagram much.
I don't think it's Instagram. I think it's with Facebook. I think Facebook has more. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of the monetization. I've steered clear of it. I don't do it. I did it one time when they were trying to encourage me to do reels. And then I was getting paid maximum. I was getting paid a couple $100 a month. I thought, because Chris Cash, Mount Philip Metalworks, says you're doing the reels, you might as well get paid to do them. I'm like, all right, fine. And then they took it away. And as soon as they took it away, I said, okay, all bets are off. No contract. I don't work for you. You know, it's like I need a contract. If you're gonna do, if you're gonna make it, you know, if you're gonna make it so you can change the rules from month to month, I don't want to be involved. I don't want to be involved with that.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. Yeah,
but what other beef? What other beefs we have?
Well, you know what? It's not a beef, but I've got a beef recipe for you, right?
Oh, let's hear it.
Simplest thing. You talked about pasta earlier, right?
Go ahead.
And like just basically like a beef ragu sort of sauce, right? Yeah. I've been eating so much of it because I'm getting fat and I'm just like, I'm sitting there, don't be doing right. So over Christmas, like all the supermarkets, they're all trying to sell like so much stuff all the time. There's always offers on, right? So Tesco's, which is like a, you know, a big sort of supermarket in the UK.
Yeah.
They were doing like roasting beef joints, right? So like not huge, but like say 700 grams, you know? So I was literally just putting one of them in like an oven pot, bottle of wine over it, 3 cans of really good tomatoes, a bay leaf and loads of salt and pepper. And I'd literally just put it in the oven for about 4 hours, like really low, for about 4 or 5 hours. And then just shred the beef with 2 forks, right? Makes the most amazing pasta sauce ever.
Wow.
Most amazing. And if you let it cool down completely, all the fat rises to the top, so you got like a hard crust of fat. You can take the fat out straight away, easy. And I tell you what, it's the most beautiful thing. And it's super simple. You don't do anything. You just put it all in one pot, leave it for a few hours. And that's it. Oh, man, it's so good. And you get so much of it as well, you know. And, you know, you can always, you know, put more tomatoes in or more wine or whatever, even water to, you know, to make it more saucy if you want. But I've eaten so much of it. It's ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous.
The funny thing is when you said roasting beef joints, there's a dispensary next to me. And I went in there to kind of see, you know, dispensaries. You know, I don't know if you know what a dispensary
pharmacy.
Is.
Pharmacy. Yeah, yeah.
No, no, dispensaries for marijuana.
It's okay.
Legal as fuck. So I've gone into a couple of them because I know the guys there. I don't really partake, but at the same time, I'm just like, I don't have time to do anything, and weed's not one of them things. But I wanted to go in and talk to the guys, and they got names for this stuff that like, it should, you know, it's like the stuff that killed Whitney Houston. You know, this is the stuff it's fucking wacky. There's one called like cat piss. There's all this, you know, they all these names. But roasting beef joint would be a good name for some marijuana strain.
The beef joint. Big fat beef joint, yeah.
What was I going to tell you? I was going to tell you something else, but yeah, whatever. Okay, by the way, we have something I didn't get to last week. We have a new segment. It's called Angle Grinders in the News. Mareko just wrote, "Sorry guys, have a good cast. My Mac isn't playing nice. You guys record." Okay. All right. We also have Angle Grinders in the News. When we first started this podcast, we created this kind of concept of the right angle grinder community. We were saying that there's nothing cheaper and more efficient for knife making than a right angle grinder. In the past,
it's also the most shady way of doing anything too.
After the Louvre heist, where I've been making jokes about the right angle grinder. Yeah. The amount of crime used by a battery-powered right-angle grinder is shocking.
Yeah. Bikes gone in seconds. Yeah.
I have a whole bay of stories that we could do at some point about right-angle grinders crime. It's, you know, the funny thing is I remember when battery-powered things, I found an article about the birth of the battery-powered tool. And, you know what? Why don't we go
into
that?
Sounds like an interesting read.
I'll skim through it I'll skim through if you want to do an ad read, and then we could do a little right angle grinder news, and then get into a couple questions.
Okay. I'm going to do a 2-for-1 here, right?
Go ahead.
Right. You're going to need a kiln, right? If you're doing any sort of knife making, you want to do your own heat treat. You want to be in control, and it doesn't need to be expensive. You can head on over to evenheat-kiln.com. They've got a huge range for any budget, any size material that you're using. Go take a look. Evenheat-kiln.com. Really good guys. We all use them, and I'm sure most of our listeners do. But if you're one of the very few who's not doing their own heat treat, get on it. Evenheat-kiln.com. And I tell you what, I think you probably need some steel too. Head on over to dharmasteel.se. And get yourself some primo stainless stainless Damascus. Yeah. And we've got a special deal for you too.
Go ahead.
So previously we've had a deal and you get 10% off, and he's always, people asking us questions like, how do you do it? And you need an account and all these things. But listen now, right? Come closer to the speaker. Okay. How does,
okay,
not 5% off?
No, okay.
No. Not 10% off?
No.
Oh, it must be 12 and a half then.
More?
Oh, 15% off Dharma Steel. 15%, that's a hell. Hell of a chunk. 15% off your Dharma Steel at dharmasteel.se by using promo code KNIFETALK15. And if you don't know what Dharma Steel is, where have you been? But have a look. Dharmasteel.se. You'll see all the patterns that they've got. Super, super simple to use. Go take a look. Dharmasteel.se and use KNIFETALK15 for 15% off.
I'm not going to bore you with the history of power tools just because I looked through it, and it was basically like the whole idea was that the battery-powered tool, the first battery-powered real drill on the marketplace was like in the 80s. But the interesting thing is how how battery-powered tools have changed over the years, to the point now where in the past 5 years, the battery-powered right-angle grinder has been amazing. I mean, it's been one of the most amazing things of all time. So I have a list of stories here. If it's up to you, if you want, which one you, I'm going to read a couple off and see what you think. We obviously the Louvre robbery gang that used, the brazen new criminal group. It's considered a brazen new criminal blueprint, how they robbed that. And then there's also mass thieves target donation temples and a burglary in Australia using a right angle grinder.
Oh, wow.
So they got six Harbor Freight tools you can use instead of a right angle grinder, which is the stupidest article of all time. Because why would you do six? Why would you buy six when you should buy one?
Just the one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like six Harbor Freight you can use instead of a right angle grinder is the stupidest. Let's read this one. I'm so mad.
Yes.
This is from Slash Gear. The right angle grinder is a favorite among many users because of the enormous range it brings to the table. It can operate like a cutting tool, material shaping tool, surface grinding, and blade reprofiler. It's even a makeshift standing discs. Right angle grinders are easy to transform into grisly weapons in the hands of the less knowledgeable users who have been fatigued. So basically, this article is like, I know, you're scared of this grinder. This relentless power tool gives off some serious rodeo bull energy. It feels like it wants to jump at your hands at first opportunity, and given how many features a lock-on switch, it can be disastrous. So here, this is like, so the first thing that they suggest is a bench grinder with a three-inch bench grinder with a Fordham, like a flex tool on the side of it.
I know, yeah, the cheap ones, yeah.
The second one is a cutoff tool, which is a battery-powered, it looks like a circular saw, but it's for grinding discs. The next one is a brushless half quarter inch right angle die grinder, which looks like a drill gun, but you put the discs on the front and they face outwards. This is the worst article ever because it's just like, I know you're. Then they tell you you should just get yourself a brushless deep cut bandsaw, which is a porta band, and then now they've got you. And then you can use a rotary powered cordless variable speed Dremel. That's another one you can get. And then you can just buy yourself a hacksaw. And then now you don't have to use a right angle grinder anymore.
Nobody is robbing a museum with a Dremel. Let's face it. They'd go through about 9 Dremels.
Can you imagine? Hey, listen, Jacques, we're going to break into this bank. What should we use?
Le Dremel.
Oh, the Dremel is the best for breaking into bank. Oh, you don't say. Do you have that little tiny wrench to get the collet off?
Yeah, tiny little collet.
Can you imagine? The Louvre was broken into again. Yeah, they use a Dremel. Fuck out of here. That's the day that everybody at the Louvre went off, you know, for a holiday.
Yeah, a full day.
We have a Border Force cut open industrial equipment to find massive stash of cocaine near London. They use the right angle grinder. Oldman B&Q thief who stole 3 right angle grinders dodges jail. That's the best. They were going to read that one. So now we know.
B&Q is like a Harbor Freight over here.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those big chains, yeah.
So in Europe, in all the articles I've found in regards to right angle grinder crime, it's all in the UK. It's all in the UK. It's all Ireland.
There's, well, you can't carry knives or guns here, so they just carry rectangle grinders instead.
These motherfuckers are... I have articles about people brandishing rectangle grinders is like, you know, the way they would... Like a baseball bat.
Jeez.
It's madness. So here's... So now we know that rectangle grinders... There's one about like... There's one article that I just didn't even bother getting. It was about this in Ireland. I guess there are certain people who want you to speak Irish, and they don't want you to write in Irish or Gaelic, I guess it would be. I'm not 100%
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Gaelic, yeah.
So
yeah.
There are all these signs that when they're written in English, dudes are coming with their right angle grinders and cutting the fucking signs down. Because they're fucking fist. So right angle grinders in the news. The best part is these journalists don't know how to grab your attention. So right angle grinders now are like... That's the new...
The headline.
Yeah, it's great. So Daniel Richards stole a DeWalt angle grinder, a small DeWalt angle grinder, and a DeWalt multi-tool, and a DeWalt screw set, and a Stanley staple at the BQ on West Home Way on September. The tools were worth a total of 406 pounds. The 42-year-old... then returned 2 days later and stole another DeWalt angle grinder and another DeWalt multi-tool. Richards of no fixed abode.
Oh.
That's an English. That's my English right there. Of no fixed abode. That's unbelievable. No fixed.
Have you never heard that phrase before?
This is the first time. I've heard the
Wow.
I've heard the unhoused, but I've never heard of no fixed abode.
No fixed abodes. Yeah, yeah.
Is that homeless? That's homeless?
Homeless, basically, yeah, yeah. No registered address, yeah.
It is so arrogant. A guy's homeless to say no fixed abode. That is like, that is insult to injury. Is that not? It's like putting a top hat on. He has no fixed abode. Motherfucker's homeless.
Like I think it's like a legal status, I think, as well. It's like, you know, if you go to the court system or whatever, you'd be of no fixed abode. Yeah.
Isn't that, but doesn't that sound a little bit too, like, not really describing the severity of the situation? It's a little bit like, he's not wearing a tuxedo. Right?
This guy's got many houses across multiple continents. Yeah. No.
He's new.
It's just an old English. I think it's like an old English thing.
They should rethink that. I think it's embarrassing. I think it's a little bit too. I know you didn't go to college. I know you didn't go to college. We're going to make it worse. We're going to no fixed abode. I don't have a home. What does that mean? So Richards of no. Of, that's really something else. Richards of no fixed abode. Pleaded guilty for theft of the shop's, of course he did. He got no plea. Which says that the Richards had an antecedent record. I don't know what that means either. The repeat offender avoided jail time and was handed a suspended sentence of 12 weeks for first degree shoplifting. But the hilarious part is he obviously, even though he had no fixed abode, he certainly knew that those grinders would have a fixed abode because it would be really easy to fucking sell.
Those DeWalt grinders are great too. The coldest ones.
Hey, I don't know. I'm surprised they didn't even put a hyperlink in there when they said what the brand name was. Get some kickbacks. DeWalt's like, we'll pay you. Yeah. Well, that's what they do. You know, that's what they do. We found out that when we were working with our PR company that the new thing to do is you do an affiliate program with magazines and you actually can hire a broker, an affiliate broker. And what you do is that affiliate broker will work with magazines and what will happen is when you get into the magazine, you will give – a kickback to every time you'll figure out a way that the hyperlink that directs person to your website, if they buy it through that hyperlink, you instantaneously give the magazine a piece of the action. So it would have been funny if they had an affiliate code with DeWalt. That would have been, you know, meanwhile, on no fixed abode is, you know, riding high and the article's making money. The article's making money off the stolen fucking grinders. That's outstanding.
Making crime pay.
Yeah, let's get into knife talk because it's like I feel now okay. guilty.
Well, look, before we do, we talking about right angle grinders. Tell us what grinder you use.
Oh, I use a Broadbeck, and I had a nice conversation with Ryan Broadbeck. They had a great Christmas and New Year's, Black Friday and Christmas because of our listeners. Our listeners did an awesome job, and it's a great grinder. I have two of them, and I use them every day, and they never let me down. And anytime, and I use the hell out of them. And anytime I have a problem, I get them a message, and their customer service is excellent. I was talking last week about customer service. Customer service is the new value, ladies and germs. Good people are so not used to good customer service that when they get decent customer service, they think it's amazing customer service. So
I've got an example of that today.
Let's do it.
So just moving to this house. It's a 250-year-old house. Lots of problems with it, as we knew there would be. So we've had lots of tradesmen in and out and all the rest of it. I mean, it's just been terrible. Like, everything is so, so expensive. Like, before somebody comes through your doors, it's like £100 at least, you know, before they even look at something. We've had electricians, and they've just been the worst ever. Worst ever. But we've had a drain blocked since we've been here, one of the drains. So this morning, I called some guy, a daily drain clean or something like that, it was called. He's like, fine, I'll be there within sort of 3 hours. He arrived. He said, there's no call-out fee. He said, I'll take a look. I'll give you a cost before I do anything. It's up to you whether you want to use me.
Right.
I was like, okay, great. He gave me a price. It was a really good price. We said, yeah, he did the job. Everything was done. He cleaned up after him. And it was far cheaper than we thought it was going to be. And he was just like a nice guy, you know. And he left. And me and Amy were just like, that's the first time we've had service where we actually – we were happy to pay him, you know, and it was just—I don't know—it was just huge. It was like a massive thing. Then he gave us a card, you know, if you know anybody who needs any services, this is my card and stuff. He was like, "Well, yeah, we're going to keep this, and we're obviously going to use you if we need you again," you know. And it was—I don't know—it's good service seems rare these days, you know, whereas it should be the norm. It's rare.
It's crazy. It's super crazy. And the craziest part is the knife making community doesn't understand. There's so many of these guys who have an adversarial relationship with their customers, and they do not realize that it doesn't take a lot to keep a customer. Doesn't take a lot. All it takes is like answering an email, doing all this bullshit. But I told last week the story of we were getting flowers for Allison, the person who works for us, her birthday. Yep. And we used this very reputable company that was supposed to deliver. They deliver all over the world, all over the country, and they're really reputable. It was supposed to be delivered on a Tuesday, and they were a week late. And when I started sending emails saying, you know, I wouldn't use this company, it was expensive. It was like $200 worth of flowers. And I wouldn't have, I wrote.
Can I go like Elton John's house around there?
Pardon me?
$200 worth of flowers. Be like Elton John's house, $200 worth of flowers around there.
They were nice. They were really nice. Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, like, Allison does a great job. And we appreciate her. And I said I wouldn't use this service if I knew it was going to be a week late. And I got these robo emails back like, oh, we're sorry you're dissatisfied. We really appreciate your patience. Is there anything else we can do? And I said, yeah, you can send me a person to talk to about this. Oh, we're really – and the next one was like, oh, we're sorry that you're still upset. You know, thank you for your patience. Is there anything else we can do? I was like, yeah, you lost a customer. I didn't say that, but I was just like – and I didn't ask for my money back, but – they arrived and they were beautiful, but it was just like, I've just realized.
It's a bit of a sting then.
Yeah. It sucks. It's like all you want is one thing. And if you can't get human beings, like we're still not, we're not behind. I'm on time and based off of what we said. We ran out of inventory a long time ago. And then we said, all right, it's going to be another, you know, meal 6 weeks or something like that. And we've gotten a few messages from people like saying, oh, just wondering the status. And Allison sends messages immediately. And they're just like so thrilled that they get a message. And it's just like
a person
who says, Jeff, today I was sending out the last few knives before I go on a little vacation for 4 days. But and this woman was just like, I was wondering. And I told Allison we're going to send it today. And she's like, oh, Jeff's putting it in the mail right now. And it's just like, it doesn't take a whole lot. And so back to Broadbeck Ironworks, their customer service is awesome. If you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you get 10% off. Bingo, bango, bongo.
There we go. Shall we do a few questions?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll take the first one from Isaac Mullins. He contacted us on Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. So if you've got any questions for us, any jokes, anything you want to tell us, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us.
Yeah.
And Isaac Mullins has done exactly that. He says, hello, relatively new listener, and extremely new to knife making. I've been working on making knives for my family and friends while R&Ding. I'm mainly using the 10 series high carbon steel, mostly 1095. My question is, what can I do to my knives that will rust proof them for my family and friends? People who aren't at all into knives don't know proper knife care. Thanks a lot.
Welcome.
So he's using 1095 carbon steel, and he's asking how we can rust proof them.
Isaac, welcome to the world of. We got good news and bad news. welcome to being dissatisfied with the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the thing that knife makers get into. The amazing thing about knife making is there's a low bar of entry, but then once you get right under that bar, you're looking for more than that bar can allow.
You slowly
spend money till you are. No fixed abode.
NFA.
NFA. You're NFA, dog. NFA. What do you think?
Let's break it down for a bit. Okay, so he's using 1095. What can I do to rust-proof my knives? So there's no real way of rust-proofing, but what you can try to do is try to prevent the onslaught of rust. So what a lot of people will do, they'll force a patina on their knife. So you may see if you're using a high carbon knife, let's say you're cutting through acidic foods, you'll almost see that patina almost in real time, like super. If you cut into a lemon or even tomatoes, you'll see like the dark spots appearing on the knife. So what a lot of makers will do, they'll purposely put a patina on. And you can do it with patterns. People use like mustard and they use like a dabbing pattern. It gives it a nice finish. But there's no way getting around it. A high carbon steel knife will darken and have a patina over time. That doesn't mean it won't rust still. It will give it a layer of protection. But if you leave your knife wet out on a countertop, for a day or two, it's going to rust. There's no doubt about it. But a patina will help prevent that slightly. And at least you can control the dark spots as well. If you're forcing a patina, some people even use like coffee etches and whatever it may be. Anything that's acidic will put a patina on there. So it's up to you whether you want an even patina, which you could do via dipping into something, or you could put like a forced pattern. I suggest experiment with that because that can be quite fun to do as well. Actually, experiment with that and seeing what sort of results you get. What have you got, Jeff?
Well, I was looking at something that I actually found something. You vamped perfectly. Now, this is a product that I've used once. The problem is even if you're getting into you figure out ways in which to do carbon steel, and then you get into stainless steel, even stainless steel will rust. There's no getting by it. Now, this is a product that I would not suggest for culinary stuff. Anything that's doing eating, I wouldn't suggest this. But there are people who do DLC coverings on their knives. What is it? There's a kind of like baked on. Is that the DLC? What's the kind of paint that's baked on?
DLC.
There are companies. There's one product that I've used once. And it's called Brownells, Brownells. And don't send me a message saying, what was that again? Here's your chance. Get your fucking pen. Brownells Alumahide 2. Alumahide
Better than the first one. Disappointed with the ending of the first one. I was disappointed with, but number two is the better one.
Yeah, that's right. Number one sucks. Number one is DFA. NFA.
NFA.
Yeah, Brownells Alumahide 2. It says that it's a formulated hard curing epoxy base that contains additional high density pigment for durable finish that sticks to all properties. It's meant for like rifles. like rifle barrels.
Right.
And it's basically like a very slow curing paint. And I, and the only reason why I mention this is because years ago I did a 1084 knife. It was an outdoor knife. And I sprayed this shit on, and it's pretty good. It's a hard surface. I'm sure that there are other companies that make that stuff. Now,
so it's like a lacquer. It dries like a lacquer, I assume.
I guess it's like an epoxy. It's an aerosol epoxy. Okay. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know the difference of it all. And I would say to you, I Jeff Fader, and Craig Lockwood are saying this is not suitable for culinary, because it's like a paint that could chip off, and you don't want it in your food. But if it was an outdoor knife and you're just like looking to fucking have a little protection, that's what I would suggest. Something like that. Yeah. Fool around with it. But there are products out there that are out there for coating guns, because, you know, rifles
like the
aren't
bluing
stable.
Stuff.
But the bluing doesn't prevent rust. The bluing helps against rust, but something can still rust.
Yeah.
So there are products, and I would highly suggest kind of snooping around to see if there's something for culinary stuff. Yeah, you got to do the forced patina hole is really the best way, especially forced patina with mustard. Something food safe is a great way to create a scaffolding for patina to develop. But in regards to rust proofing, that's what I would say. But you got to go into stainless, and when you get into stainless, you got to get yourself an Even Heat manufacturer to find the heat ovens available. Go to evenheat-kiln.com.
Another thing to consider as well is if you're just storing knives as well, with the weather as well, if you're in a humid part of the world, they can sort of rust that way as well. So put some oil on them while they're sitting, so I'm just looking now, there's camellia oil, which I've used, and the subaki oil. They're just like food safe oils, tiny little drop, and just smear them over the blade. And it'll make them sort of airtight so that they don't start basically degrading, I suppose. That may be worth it as well. The main thing is if family or friends are buying them, just tell them to take care of them, not to leave them wet, not to put them into dishwashers, that kind of thing. As well as the rust, and you'd want them, rattling around in cutlery drawers as well, because that'll kill your edges. Just basic sort of, care of the knife. Maybe do a bit of research on that and just pass that on to anybody you're passing these knives to.
There is another product that I would suggest. My friends at Baker Forge have created a product called Gator Skin. Gator Skin is, they make premium exotic steels with copper and all that stuff. And they created something called Gator Skin, which is supposed to be really good. I haven't used it. I've heard good things, but it's a really good protectant on your steel. So definitely go check out Gator Skin at Baker Forge. Yeah. Shout out to Coy and the boys. Next one comes from our man, Keith Tensing. Keith Tensing. Keith Tensing. Hi, guys. Keith Tensing from St. Galgano Armory. I think we got that right, Keith, for the
I
first
think
time.
So.
Well, I had to spell it phonetically. He spelled it phonetically too, because I kill him every time. I think it probably makes him want to, he hates it. I've thought about trying to take this craft full time, as I love it. However, one fear is that if I do, it will become work, and that will no longer love the craft. How do you smith full time and maintain your passion for it without it turning into work? Great question.
Well, I don't. I certainly don't do this full time. I barely do it any time at the moment. But it's the thing with anything that you love doing. If all of a sudden your life depends upon that, as in, paying bills, paying for groceries, paying for mortgages, rents, whatever it may be, it's going to put a certain pressure on you. So we get this question so often, people saying, when is the right time to go full time and all the rest of it? Everybody's in a different situation. It's hard to tell anybody that. But I think if you're enjoying what you're doing and you're worried that you won't enjoy it doing it full time, you don't have to wake up one day and just say, hey, I'm now full time. You just make a little bit more. You just make a little bit more whilst you're still doing your other thing. And if it comes to the point where you can't juggle making and your normal work, well, then you've got a decision to make. But, you don't have to just wake up one morning and go, right, that's it. From now on, 100% of my time will be making knives. it'd be weird to do that. So yeah, just make more. If you're enjoying it, just make more. Just make more, and it maybe come to that point where you have to make that decision, but don't force it.
I don't think I've ever been happier than I am. Well, since I started Fader Knives, I've never been as stressed as other jobs. I used to have to be the second guy. I was not the lead guy. I was the second guy at metal shops, and I was always responsible for getting everything ready for an installation. And it was the pressure of like making sure I have all the drill bits, making sure I have all having the truck fit, having all the tools that we're going to need. Because you send 10 guys on a job site, you know, far from the shop, the meter's running, and if we've forgotten anything, it's my fault. So there were times where I wouldn't sleep at night because I thought, do I have enough 5/32 drill bits? And do I have, you know, redundant taps if we break taps? What are we going to do about it? Was so stressful. And anytime I was working for other people, I was constantly in these positions of high stress.
Yeah.
Since I started Fader Knives, and then every year we've had an increase of growth, and I'm not going to pretend like it's like shooting we're a rocket into space, but we've had incremental, very strong growth every single year to the point where we feel very stable in what we're doing. We're going to hire somebody new. We got big plans coming up. We're really excited. We're fired up. And I find myself to be enjoying the overall experience as opposed to, oh, I got it. I never like grinding knives. I hate grinding knives. I don't like it at all. Standing in front of the grinder, except for standing in front of the Broadbeck Ironworks, I love standing in front of that. But I don't like grinding knives in general. I don't like it. But at the same time, I like this, the way this business is going. I like exceeding expectations. I like growth. I like the fact that we're growing and in a positive way, and we're not flea bagging. We're not being hand to mouth about things, and we can make really great decisions. We're going to have our Christmas party next week, and I can't wait. And I feel as though you have to start to think about the different parts of the successes of and feelings of being, you know, quote unquote full time. I love, I'm not as creative as I was when I was a sculptor, but I enjoy the satisfaction of doing what I'm saying I'm going to doing, and we're growing. And I don't feel like I'm making a bad decision. It's different. It's just different. And I think that I still feel, and it might be a generational thing, but there's this weird Peter Pan thing going on where everything's supposed to be fun all the time and everything, but you got to pay bills too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's one of those things. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. You enjoy the whole 360 thing of it all. You know, it's not necessarily just the knife making. It's the whole running a business and making sure everything's right.
Because you're doing it. You know,
and I think that's key as well. So if you're thinking of doing this full time, remember you need to be, you know, you're probably going to start on your own. You probably won't have a team around you to begin with. So you're going to have to do the accounting. You're going to have to do the marketing. You're going to have to go to the post office multiple times a week. You're going to have to do all these things, as well as just what you see at the moment is just the fun bit. There's so much more that goes with that. If you're having fun doing it now, that's great. But just keep doing more of what you're doing. I think that's the way in.
But the most fun is like all of a sudden the growth. Like our landlord needed our this year's certificate of insurance. Mm. I didn't know about it, so I send a message to somebody in the office. And they're like, "Okay, no problem. I'll send it to him now." And I was like, "I didn't have to do anything. I paid somebody. I'm able to afford to pay someone to deal with some of these problems." You know, when we have a problem with the website, I have someone to talk to that I pay that takes care of the problem. And it's not like, oh my God, I got to pay this person. It's fucking awesome. It's fucking great. It's fucking fun. We're making enough money that I can pay people to fix a problem. And I don't feel as though I just spent all this money on this person. They're doing one. They're making my life easier. It's fantastic. Fantastic. I'm psyched. I got nice Christmas bonuses for the guys. I'm really pumped up. We're excited for this Christmas bonus. We're going to have a Christmas party. We're going to have some fun. We're going to eat some dumplings. We're going to go to Chinatown. They can eat and drink whatever the hell they want. We're going to have a lot of laughs. And I'm very grateful. And the funny thing is like every year I try to do a Christmas bonus because I liked it when I was in a shop and they gave us Christmas bonuses. And then I went to other jobs and they didn't give us Christmas bonuses. I know it's not a big deal, but like, I'm excited to give them a little bit of thank you, like extra thank you for, you know, making this
show your appreciation.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I don't
feel like, oh God, I got to give them all this money. You know what? I'm fucking happy. I'm happy to be able to have a business that people want to grow and they believe in what I'm doing. That's satisfying, you know? People, some of you guys out there, you guys got to think the bigger picture instead of just like, you know, I don't want to have to pay somebody. Pay them! Fucking awesome! make enough knives, sell enough knives, you can pay somebody. And then all of a sudden, you know, you start to realize that when you pay for problems to go away, it's not so bad.
I think that's probably everybody's goal, isn't it? If they're in this game, I'd say 90% of people who are making knives, they're doing it on their own. Or they may be in a shared shop with other people who are in a similar situation. But I think everybody's goal is to have people around them to ease the burden for those things that they don't really want to be doing. And other people may be better at it than them anyway. You know, for that to happen, I think that's everybody's goal. And, yeah, you know, I fully commend you for what you've sort of built up there. It's incredible.
Look, it's not like I got like an office space and it's like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street.
You're not throwing dwarves.
I'm still wearing a fucking sweatshirt. I still got to like, you know, I still got a fucking goofy scarf on and I'm cold in the shop and all that stuff. But like when I run the boiler and I buy a half a tank of oil, I run that oil tank and I think to myself, I deserve that oil. I sold enough knives and I deserve this fucking heat and I feel better about myself. I tell you what, I'm talking about the all beef review. I have a beef with this idea that there's this instant room for, and we talked about it last week, the fact that when you start to make knives, which is different than anything else, once you learn how to make a knife, it's an automatic commodity that you really can't do a whole lot with afterwards. Like, you make 10 knives, what are you going to do with them, right? Hmm. I mean, it's an instant commodity, and you think to yourself, maybe I can make these and sell them. And then when you get into your mind, now I have a potential business. Like, you're all of a sudden, you learn how to make lemonade, and you're like, I could do a lemonade stand outside.
Yeah.
You know, but will I be tired of lemonade if I'm making a lemonade stand every day? And it's like, at some point, you have to realize with knife making, you have to figure out the grand scale, the grand picture. And I like the fact that this question came in because it's like, he has a job that this is fun for him. Maybe you should just keep it that way.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you should just keep it that way. And then, you know, do your thing, and when you're working, you're thinking about the next project and blah, 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 and keep the love. Keep the love alive, you know?
Yeah.
Or make the mess. Okay. Or make the mess.
Crack those eggs.
Make the mess, baby.
Right. I'm going to tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. We all need stuff. We all need everything, dude. We all need steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns. We need it all. Do you know who's got it? Our boy Lawrence over at maritimeknifesupply.com. Also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram, so always go take a look there as well. But yeah, super easy to use the online store there. He's always got great, great stuff in. And he's a great person as well. So, you know, use Maritime Knife Supply. It's a no-brainer. Use maritimeknifesupply.com. But honestly, go take a look. They've got stuff there you probably won't find anywhere else as well. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. If you're getting a 10-pack of belts, you'll get 10% off as well. So always worth checking. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
I want to give a shout-out to a new-to-me Instagram account that we are following on Knife Talk Podcast Instagram. It is A1 Super Knife Meme Team. It's
Meme Team.
A1 Super Knife Meme Team. And it's our man, who is it who runs it? It's a knife maker. He's a great knife maker. He's our friend. And he just posted, I'm going to repost it. They posted a Hollywood celebrity before and after being a knife maker. And on the left side is a picture of Russell Crowe. And on the right side, it's Alfredo Facci Pieri, our friend. It's actually very funny. So shout out to A1 Super Knife Meme Team. We are with you, and God bless you. Okay, so we have a question here from our man J-Mod Knives. It's an audio question. You can send it to us at Knife Talk Podcast Instagram. Go to the DM button, and then there's a little phone, or there's a little, you can voice record. Don't call us. It's fine. Yeah, so here's J-Mod Knives. Justin Modica has this to say.
What up, Knife Talk crew? I got one for you. How do you guys clean your knives and cutting boards after cutting a bunch of garlic and onion? I went to cut up a mango last night, and the mango had an extreme garlic flavor to it. It was disgusting. So soap and water isn't really cutting it. When I smell my cutting board and knives, they all smell like garlic and onion. So just wondering how you guys get that smell out. Appreciate the content every single week. Cheers.
J-Mod Knives is the man.
We've all done that, haven't we? Taking a bite of a watermelon and it's all garlicky. It's the worst.
You know what's the worst? You know, talk about all beef review is you go to a restaurant and you get once had we had some creme brulee or something like that and it tasted like garlic because the prep guy was doing the garbage, doing the dessert too. Personally, one of the things that my wife taught me this is she says when you have garlic on your hands, if you rub a stainless steel spoon in your hand underwater, the garlic flavor goes away.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. Wow. Like any kind of stainless steel, if you have it on your fingers, go into the water with stainless, like a stainless steel spoon or a stainless steel fork or even your knife, stainless steel, and then rub it around, and then the smell goes takes off your hands.
Remember, you get 50% off Dharma Steel. Dharma Steel. Knife Talk 15 at Dharma Steel.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you get you want to get your garlic off your hands? Get yourself some Dharma Steel. Knife Talk 15. I would assume that this is a carbon steel issue. Do you think? Because soap and water with stainless steel works.
Yeah, but also on the boards as well. I mean, it can sort of leach, you know, because garlic can be quite oily if it's fresh, and it can leach into the board. Multiple boards, that's the only way, so surely. I know people use lemon then as well and stuff like that, but I mean, we've got a bunch of boards here, and there's one that I particularly always use, you know, onions and garlic, it's all beaten up. Yeah, get yourself a new board. I think that's the only way, I think.
So what kind of boards do you use?
Just wooden, and they're not like end grain. They're just slabs. You know, just cheap ones. Nothing special. We do have one big end grain one, but to be honest with you, I rarely ever use it. It's heavy to move around. Yeah. You know, we just got light. They're almost like, you know, just like plates. They're just plates of wood, I suppose. We just got a bunch of them, and it's super simple.
Is it bad that I still use a plastic cutting board?
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
It is bad. I think so.
For like the microplastics?
Microplastics.
I mean, my shit's over. I mean, it's over for me now. I mean, I'm 52. Yeah. I gotta worry about microplastics now.
True.
I probably have like a fucking golf ball in my testicles right now of microplastics. Isn't that where it all goes?
Into your testes.
Yeah, it goes right in your sack. Isn't that one of the balls?
Jeez.
It's all the micro. It's not. You actually wouldn't be if you didn't. You didn't actually have two testicles. You actually had one pouch for your microplastics for all of your entire life.
My plastic pouch.
Yeah, it's like a fucking kangaroo. Like,
I think that's why one one is generally lower than the other because it's just full of more.
Yeah, it's a microplastics. Can you imagine? I think I've heard that. I think that I heard that's where all the microplastics go. So if you see a guy with big balls, you think he's got big balls. And he might have cancer, too.
He's got plastic cutting boards.
you never know. Look at the that would be the funniest thing. It's like, look at the size of that guy's penis. And that's all microplastics. Yeah, he's in for a hard time. Maybe that was the picture of a miracle. Maybe he was fooling around with the microplastics. Oh, his fucker dick looks so big. Boy, they're using them plastic cutting boards too much. Lifetime of microplastics. How bad would that be if, like, all these attributes that we're looking towards, like having a giant penis or having all these things, it actually was because you had some sort of, like, you know, toxicity microplastics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But then we realize it, and then it's just like, fucking microplastics. That's why, that's why, never mind, I'm not going to make any bad jokes. I use the plastics because it's just like, they're like you said, we have a, I got a wooden cutting board a friend of mine gave me, and it's beautiful, but it's huge. And it's like schlepping those big, like, it's like a wreck.
Like a butcher's block. Yeah, big, heavy things. No, we just use, like, they're cheap and thin. And to be honest, we stick them in the dishwasher as well. Yeah. I know you're not meant to with wood. And they do occasionally warp, but they're cheap. You just get, you know, they're really cheap.
Oh, man, don't tell that to Cutting Board Talk. That podcast is the number one cutting board podcast on this German festive planet. We hear the Knife Talk guys are putting their wooden cutting boards in the dishwasher.
Yeah, but I think that plastic ones, I mean, if you look at a plastic board, you can see all your knife cuts in there. You can see them. And I don't think they heal, whereas like a wooden one, because they're like fibers, they almost like auto-heal a bit as well, you know? The cuts, they sort of come back into each other. So there's less chance of, you know, bacteria and stuff sticking in them, I'd imagine. Huh. I don't know, but I've just always used one.
When I was doing a lot of, when I was doing more food content, now I've gotten too tired. Like I got Bob does it, you know, or sometimes I'll do something, but I try not to go crazy. But anytime I use a plastic cutting board, like I'm cooking like I normally cook, oh, the plastic cutting board comments. It's like, I can't believe, what about you and those... What's going on with you and the microplastics? I'm like, I'm sitting here with a set of nuts like you wouldn't believe. Are you kidding me? This is a new Ozempic, bitch. It's microplastics. Or Viagra. I can't get the Viagra and the Ozempic mixed up. Don't you do it? You don't need to put the right. Losing. I'm thin, but my dick is big.
I think if you lose weight, it just makes your penis seem bigger. I think
they gotta go. They got, you gotta call that like the double decker or something like that when you take them both at the same time.
Take them both.
The double
one's inflating while the rest of your body's shrinking.
Yeah. Talk about the seesaw effect.
Doubling down.
Oh, the double decker. Can you imagine? What do you take for certain? You go to the doctor, and the doctor says, "So, what kind of medications are you on?" Oh, I'm double deck. I'm double decking Ozempic and Viagra. As we speak, I'm getting thinner in this appointment, and my dick's getting harder. Double decker.
Okay, I think we just worked up Miraculous picture. We know exactly.
He's double decking. Double decking.
He's double decking. We've got to ask him if we can use that image.
Ask him. I don't want to get it. I don't want to know. We're going to get flagged. That picture looks so real. That picture looks so... It just, I can't believe the algorithm wouldn't flag us. I can't. I mean, it really does look like he's... We'll talk to him next. We got to remember to talk to him next week about it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So we talked cutting boards. Now we could talk about sharpening.
Yeah.
If you're going to be sharpening knives, how do you do it, Jeff?
I'm using Tormek. I love the Tormek, and I am a huge fan of it. Made me a better knife maker. It's a water-cooled sharpening system, and I have three of them, which made my life easier because I can go three different grits, and then I can just walk down the way, which is great. And if you should definitely go to Tormek_sharpening on Instagram and see what the fuss is about, or you can go to Tormek.com. And wherever you are in the world, they have a distributor. This is a worldwide company. So made in Sweden. They're really great products, and you can send them messages, and they'll tell you all about them. If you want to ask me a question, I'm happy to ask and get you with the right person, but I'm a big fan of Tormek.
Cool. I got another question here. I'm just looking through the questions.
Or
quickly.
We could do a beef we should finish off with the beef, just I feel badly we didn't do the all beef review.
Yeah. But okay. Let's do this one from Paul Janzer because he's earned it. Gold star listener. He's earned it. He's got a cost effectiveness question to you. Guys.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I got the wrong thing.
When grinding the initial bevel, is it more cost effective to start at a low grit, like a 36, and remove a lot of material in a hurry, but have more belts in the progression to remove all the scratches, or start with a higher grit, like 80 or even 120, and not remove material as fast, but not have to buy the low grit belts at all? The low grit belts should last longer, but typically cost more than the higher grit.
Great question.
I'd say... I mean, what I've always done is start with a low grit. I generally about a 60 for me, and then progress up. Simply because if you're starting with like 120s or something like that, you can spend all day at the grinder just getting through it. And, you know, okay, belts aren't cheap, but nor is your time. And I think that's going to be one of those decisions where you think, I think my time is worth a bit more than that. And yeah, just blow out with it. I mean, you said a 36 there. They frightened me, to be honest. I 60 is the sort of what I'd normally start with. But yeah, I think it gets to the point where you're looking at your consumables and it's holding you, it's slowing you down and holding you back. I think it's a bit of a false economy there. I think pay for the good stuff to get you moving quickly, I think, because the value is in that end product. You know, the consumables are such a small, small portion of your cost. The cost is your time.
I couldn't agree more. I use the 36. I tell you what, go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com and get the Norton Razor Stars. You get the yellow 36 grit. Those motherfuckers will cut through it. I mean, it'll get you in the Louvre. Those motherfuckers, it'll get you in the Louvre. They're unbelievable. And
big broad back, strapped to your back.
Yeah. You got a double deck. You got a double deck and with the broad back into the Louvre. Get it all going on. You get your dick up, your broad back on your back, and you're zipping through, getting everything. But I go 36 grit as far as I can, and I actually don't fool around too much with the lower grit belts because I wanna prepare the knives for hand sanding. I'm now spending more time on the disc sander because I'm finding that if I spend more time with the higher grits on the disc sander, I can take off those peaks, those big 36 grit peaks. I can get faster down to the valley. And then when I start hand sanding, I'm hand sanding starting at 220. And I'm got it to the point where we can hand sand a knife in just about 30 minutes. Even like AEBL or Nitro V, I'm having really great results. And I'm getting to the point now where the knives are better because I'm just making little changes and I'm preparing it for the hand sanding. So I also was in a class with a master bladesmith and I was talking to him about the price of belts. And he goes, I don't worry about the price of belts. Like that's, you got to stop worrying about the price of belts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Maritime's got 10% off when you buy a 10 pack of braces. But I think that Craig said the same right thing. It's your time is more valuable than the belts, and you know, don't sit less time on the grinder. I think is you know, go all the way, go as far as you can with a coarser grit. That's what I think.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do a beef then, Trey.
Yeah, let's do a couple beefs. So guys, you got another week. We got to transfer again. You got another week. We're going to do the all beef review next week. I said that last week, but now this is turning into a radio tease, which I like. But,
yeah.
You know, I think we've gotten a lot. Oh, let's save Paul Jans's audio beef for next week.
Okay.
This is good.
Brigham Kindle. I'm sick and tired of all these weird AI Facebook group questions and weird-ass videos everywhere. I can't wait for people to stop using AI. Oh, and let's also do a big, fat old beef review shout-out to all those fake personal loan calls I get from the call centres trying to scam people out of their money. Screw them. Yeah, I don't know what that loan thing is. But
I'll tell you.
I'm over it, too.
It used to be, yeah. I don't know what happened. Back in the day, we'd get telemarketers. And it got to the point where it was so bad, you know, people, you know, my parents would have to get up, you're the phone rings and, you know, they can't control themselves. They go to answer the phone and it's a telemarketer, right? So there was this, in New York State, they had this thing where you could get on this list and you wouldn't get any telemarketer calls. And then something happened and now we get these bursts of these AI loan calls. And it sounds like a person on the other line, but then now they figured out ways that, cell phone companies have figured out ways to tell you if it's a spam call or not, but they are super duper annoying. The AI Facebook groups are super duper annoying. I think, I don't know what it is about Facebook, but I find that there's more AI videos on Facebook than there are on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I was going to tell you when you were talking about the not being able to, know if it's a, I was looking at one reel on Facebook and it was, you know, the caption was in Thai, I guess. I don't know. It wasn't in like, you know, the standard English letters. It was like, you know, in some, you know, Sanskrit. I don't know what the hell it was, frankly. And it was dragons captured. And it was a zoo. And it was these little dragons that looked like the dragons from like a cartoon, like a China, like an Asian dragon. And I'm looking at these things. And all of a sudden I'm like, stop looking. This is not a real fucking, this is AI.
You're feeding it.
Yeah, this is AI, you idiot. And then now I'm like, I got Thai Asian dragons all over the place. Could be worse.
Yeah. The kids always ask me on my phone, can we look at the real Pokemons? And like, there's loads of Japanese accounts where they've made like really realistic AI of real Pokemons, you know, walking through the woods and stuff. And the kids love it. They're like, you know it's not real. They're like, yeah, we know it's not real, but I'm not sure they do.
It's brutal.
Do you want to take the next one from fucking Dustin Shaner?
From what? So Dustin Shaner says, I cuss. And I don't care about people cussing. But when I'm listening to a podcast where they cuss and it cuts out, it sounds like dead air, which makes it seem like I've lost connection to my Bluetooth or my phone's about to ring. If the people on podcasts cuss, don't bleep it. Just cuss or not cuss. That is all. Yeah, I know what he's saying. So, like, I guess, I guess fuck gets bleeped and shit doesn't. Some of these, they're on some Instagram things, or I don't know. There's certain things that they censor certain parts, and it is, it doesn't sound good. And it's like, we're all adults. Why are we doing this? You know?
Yeah.
It reminds me, we came up on the anniversary of when that guy complained to you that I curse too much, which was so obnoxious. And that he didn't want to say anything bad about the royal prince. You know, the prince, the prince got no, you know, he's sitting pretty, and I'm the one is the big problem. So that was the cursing is one of those weird things. I was saying on Instagram Live last 2 weeks ago about cursing, because I was talking about the fact that we got that message, and I remember every so often we'll get like a big time guy who wants to come on this podcast or the other podcast, and he'll say to me, I want to come on your podcast, but I know that you have rough language. I was wondering if you could, be sensitive to that. And I said, of course. Yeah. I'm super sensitive to that. But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, well then you better be a good interview. And every every time someone comes on and doesn't want me to curse, they're relatively mediocre. And all I can think of is if you were a little bit less guarded, maybe this would be a more interesting conversation.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
One more beef and let's get the hell out of here.
Scott Fernandez, if it's not too late, my beef is with my own friends and family for feeling the need to share every single knife-related reel that crosses their feed with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still get that from a lot of people, yeah.
You know who gets sent a lot over Knife Talk is that ultrasonic, you know, vibrating knife. You know, I get that shit every 5 minutes. That and then Serbian cleaver. Oh, you could do this. Couldn't you do this?
I get clips of Forged in Fire all the time saying, have you seen this? This looks great. Yeah. All the time still. And it's like, really?
I wrote back to Scott. I said, hey, listen, at least they care about you. You know, it's like,
true.
You know,
at least you're getting messages.
When it comes down to it, at least they care about you. You know, so my
that's a good way to finish the show, maybe. Oh, no, go on.
I was just gonna say, Scott, just next time you're at the family event and they want to send you a video, just start double decking that Ozempic and Viagra, and then they'll never send you another clip again.
Yeah, stab at each leg.
I think that's the name of the show. Double decking. Double deck.
Right. Thank you all for I think next week we can have no beef review. We promise you. Well, I'm not going to promise, but we aim to. And hopefully the three of us will be here next week, and we shall speak to you then. Bye for now.